Welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for December 1995. Before we get into the Market Scope with Phil Wayne, let's check out our DX Change. Jim Renfrew, whose phone number is 716-458-8574, up to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is selling a Hammerlin HQ-150, along with a Xerox copy of the manual, originally purchased from Jim Herkimer in 1982. It's a big boat anchor receiver with coverage from 540 kilohertz up to 31 megahertz, with a Q-multiplier and crystal facing. He's selling it because he has since acquired three other receivers. Cost $250 plus shipping. Quentin R. Davis, whose ham call sign is WA9WME, at 1905 Blackiston Mill Road in Jeffersonville, Indiana, 47130, is offering a Hammerlin HQ-180 for $200. And now, here he is, Phil Wayne.
Hello, aficionados of all broadcast endeavors. This is Phil Wayne from Market Scope, a monthly peek at all kinds of tidbits that emanate from radio speakers everywhere. As you may recall, this month we're back in Los Angeles again, as Mark Marino continues with his update on all the latest format changes there.
And just because they're a low-powered independent station, it doesn't mean they're going to be without some games.
The Anaheim Bullfrogs have hopped over to K-Max 107.1 Sports to the Max.
Great action here in the RHI. Cam Blum has the puck, takes a shot, saved by Rob Laurie. He covers it up like a mother hen protecting its young.
I'm Lou Stowers. Join Charlie Simmer and me for the exciting Anaheim Bullfrogs roller hockey action.
In all of sports, there can only be one that is the best, and you're listening to it. K-Max 107.1 FM, Sports to the Max.
Turn your radio on, get on the telephone. It's time for Big Joe and Sports Radio. You gotta give it up, get into this thing.
Just tell how you feel, make the telephone ring. Controversial, you're democratically. You can make it what you want to be. Talking Joe McDonald, and if you can hang, what we're talking is a sports thing.
Even though they're a small independent radio station, they're not afraid to badger other radio stations in the market who broadcast sports.
Why settle for a little extra when you can have the max? K-Max 107.1 FM, Sports to the Max.
And I'll guarantee you, the Godfather Paul Caruso has better musical taste than Nick Zaccanino. How you doing, Paul?
Hi, Joe. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks a lot.
Good.
I noticed they had a short day today in the courtroom, so bring
well,
us up to date.
That's why, one reason I took my wife, Gloria, to the trial today.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, how was it?
Well, boring. And she met Johnny Cochran and Bob Shapiro, both of whom were very friendly. And I thought that Woody Clark, the deputy DA, did a tremendous job on Dr. Gertie's.
Another change came on the FM LA radio dial, just 10 megahertz below K-Max at 97.1. On Tuesday, August 1st, KLSX dropped every show they had except Howard Stern and brought in a talk format.
Real Radio 97.1, weather for Los Angeles and Orange County. Tonight, low fog and clouds moving inland from the coast. Lows in the 60s. Wednesday morning, low clouds and dense fog clearing in the afternoon. Temperatures ranging from the middle 70s on the coast to the upper 80s inland. Wait a minute, don't that just kind of break you up when they be talking about clearing? When that cloud clear off, you're going to be scorched, chocolateer than I am. Wednesday night, more low clouds and fog. Lows in the 60s. Right now, it's 72 in coast. Costa Mesa, it's 70 degrees in Norwalk, and it's 69 in Pasadena. Weather report, next time you hear it, will be at 9:45 from Real Radio 97.1. Radio 97.1. How are my babies doing this evening? This is Mother Love. I am your girlfriend in the air chair. I am here taking your telephone calls at 1-800-971-9777. How you doing out there in Radio Land? I missed you. I tell you, since we last chatted, I have given up smoking. I cut down on smoking. Cut down on smoking. I gave up my drinking. Gave up my... Can you believe
it? Mother Love used to be a host on KFI in the evenings. And as you'll hear with the new changes at KLSX, not all the listeners were happy with these changes.
Jack Daniels. And I quit drinking because it didn't get me drunk. You know, and when Jack Daniels don't get you drunk, I think it's pretty much time for you to give that up. And I gave it up. Giving up a vice is not an easy thing to do. Let's go to Simi Valley and talk to Mario. Hey, Mario, you're on Real Radio 97.1.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey.
You know, I've been a big fan of KLSX for a long time.
Continue to be a big fan.
Okay, well, I was just wondering what happened to Jim Ladd, because I was a big fan of his.
Oh, well, you know, I think Jim Ladd, he drove off into the sunset, and he probably went and got a better job for more money. I'm glad you called Real Radio 97.1. Let's go to Calabasas and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim, you're on 97.1 Real Radio.
Mother
Real...
Love.
Yes.
I'm bummed.
Why are you bummed?
Same reason that guy. I used to listen to Jim Ladd all the time.
Oh.
He was like the one thing that made my life happy at night. You know,
he'd
come out and play all these great songs and everything.
Well, you know, sometimes, baby, you just have to let it go. Let it go. He's off into the sunset. He's probably, like I said, someplace programming a radio station somewhere. Or probably tying one on, glad that he's doing something else. And Mother Love is here. You know, I gotta tell you this. He's listening to Mother Love on Real Radio 97.1.
I heard your conversation a little earlier about, you know, being sensitive and whatnot.
Oh, so y'all like that. You like that.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, Baba Booey.
Saying, baby, I know exactly what you're saying.
Apparently, some of the other talk show hosts on the station are going to be people like Cato Kaelin and Heidi Fleiss.
It goes like this.
I think what I found ridiculous, and I even use it in my stand-up, is how they use this pepper spray. You know, the cops, oh, we're going to get them with pepper spray. I mean, I grew up around Mexicans. We eat peppers. What the hell is that going to do to us?
Carlos Oscar. It works like that. Real Radio 97.1.
No matter what else KLSX decides to offer as a talk station, I can guarantee L.A. listeners will get a whole lot of fun and enjoyment from listening to Mother Love. I'm Mark Marino reporting for the DX Audio Service.
Thank you, Mark. Good to hear from you, and a great job editing down all those air checks. Now, for all you guys and gals that love those station IDs, I thought I would throw one in that I caught a few weeks ago.
In the tradition of great 70s stations of the past.
You're listening to WNCI's 70s Saturday Night.
This is Phil for Market Scope, and now shaking his booty to My Sharona, steaming up the windows in Studio C, here's John Bowker.
Historical Moments in Radio, a collection of stories from the rich and exciting past on the AM radio dial. And this month, we're going to give you a whole new bunch of important dates as we take a look at that watershed year in broadcasting, 1934. Yes, 1934 did feature the celebration of the National Radio Club's first anniversary, but there were a few other happenings going on, too. In fact, on the very first day of 1934, the Federal Radio Commission expanded the standard broadcast band above 1500 on the dial for the very first time. You may remember from some of our earlier Historical Moments programs that some stations had been given experimental licenses to try out those short waves, as they were known, above 1500. And the results had been excellent. So, on January 1st, 1934, some stations were granted licenses to use 1530, 1550, and 1570 on the dial, just those three. They were expected to broadcast high-fidelity music. New radios were already on the market with dial spreads all the way up to 1600, so the stations could be heard. And that, of course, also meant in some cities you could tune in the local police calls, Philadelphia, Dallas, among others. But another enormous change was in the works during January that year. The Crosley Broadcasting Company in Cincinnati had won an experimental license to use a new superpower transmitter and an enormous landmark of an antenna. On January 15, 1934, WLW signed on from their gargantuan facility in Mason, Ohio, with a 500,000-watt non-directional signal. Reports of clear reception, even during thunderstorms, were received from hundreds of miles away at night. And I can tell you firsthand, it was often the clearest nighttime station I could hear from my home in Vermont, over 600 miles away. The Federal Radio Commission had planned five such stations scattered around the United States that would satisfy any need for emergency communications. And I can tell you as a sidelight that the WLW tests went very well, in fact, maybe too well. General Sarnoff of RCA gambled that the government would authorize at least four more superpower stations, and he commissioned his engineers in Camden, New Jersey, to start building and testing another 500,000-watt transmitter. He wanted to use it for WJZ in New York City on his Blue Network. So streets in Camden, New Jersey were torn up while the public service company strung new high-voltage and high-power lines to RCA's Building 10 and down at the corner of Front and Cooper Streets in Camden so that the Goliath that he was building could be tested at full power. Indeed, it was built, it worked beautifully, and it was ready for delivery as soon as the government gave approval for the next 500,000-watt station. But the approval never came. By 1936, the government was growing cool to the idea of so much communications power residing in the hands of one company, and not long after withdrew the WLW license for 500,000 watts, returning them then to 50,000 watts. And by the way, that magnificent tower is still in use by WLW. It's worth a trip to Mason, Ohio, just to stand outside the fence surrounding that property and gape up at that elegant diamond-shaped antenna. Now, as a further digression, I learned a few years ago what became of that mass of steel cabinets and high-power glass and ceramic tubes that RCA had fashioned into the superpower transmitter that nobody wanted. It was sold to Great Britain early in World War II and set up some 50 feet underground in a cement nerve center just northeast of London. And it was used to broadcast confusing programs to the Germans during the during the war. You have to ask me sometime about Project Aspidistra, perhaps. But the most major event in the radio industry in 1934 was the passage of the Communications Act of 1934. For the first time, the role of government in regulating radio and wire services was clearly spelled out. Here's some of the words in the Communications Act of 1934. Quote, "The Radio Act of 1910 is repealed. The Radio Act of 1927 is repealed. The Federal Communications Commission is hereby created." Boy, that's pretty heady stuff, you know. 21 words that changed the industry almost completely. It didn't take the FCC long to get into trouble. They had a major petition for changes in the clear channel rules 2 weeks after they were formed. And I don't think they've resolved them yet. We'll see you next month. For Historical Moments, this is John Bowker.
Let's take some time to look at some news and notes from around headquarters. First of all, the NRC Ham List. What has happened to that, you might ask? Well, the National Radio Club Ham List is going to be updated real soon. Now, since there have been many changes in ham radio, and some people have updated their call signs and done some changing, I thought that now would be a good time to start fresh. Now, I'm not going to be using any of the information from the old list, so if you want to be on the new list, please send me your information no later than December the 15th, 1995. When I receive your information, I'll send you one of my QSL cards to verify that I have received it if you send it by mail. Now, here's what I want. Your name, call sign, and up to 40 characters of information on where you operate. For example, I hang out on the local 443-625 repeater here in Lima, and I work HF. My entry would look something like 443.625 plus space HF / 80 through 10 CW space 10 SSB. Now, verification for your call sign will be taken out of the fall edition of SAM. Times listed should be in Zulu with frequency information and content of NETS. Again, I'd like to stress that if you have sent in information in the past, it will not automatically be used in the next list. You must send in new information. Send it to Fred Vobey at the DX Audio Service, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802-5031. Or you can email it to gnbc@alpha.wcoil.com. Several members have wondered, whatever happened to the CPC report? Well, we've put that over onto the voicemail system. So if you'd like to get the latest CPC test reports, just give it a call at area 419-228-4199 and follow the instructions. Let's take a look at our DX time machine from 50 years ago from the November 10th, 1945 DX News. Reception of KINY was reported by Dick Cooper in Pennsylvania and Ray Edge up in Buffalo, New York. And Al Bartholomew of Corning, New York received his 53rd Mexican verification. This one was from XERB. From 25 years ago, from the November 7th, 1970 DX News magazine, Harry Helms Jr. of Athens, Georgia, assured National Radio Club members that he was authorized to issue verifications for radio station WIXE and that no one received an automatic verification. From 10 years ago, from the November 11th, 1985 DX News magazine, U.S. radio stations on Canadian Clear Channels were authorized by the Federal Communications Commission to begin full-time operations. And yet, more madness hits the air. That's our DX time machine. And finally, I had an interesting call on our voicemail system from someone who would not give their phone number or their name. And they were obviously not a DX Audio Service member, yet voiced a concern that they could not be on the Musings for Members column. I guess to sum it up, I have to say what Paul Swearingen said back in November 6 on DX News Magazine, that it's NRC policy that only members may contribute to columns, although in the public interest, we will sometimes list important information in the pages. However, recently two ex-members have continued to send in loggings to column editors who had no idea that they were accepting items from people whose memberships had expired. Basically, if you choose not to renew, then you have chosen not to have any inclusion into the magazine. So please, do not call the voicemail system and pack it with stuff that we cannot use. And finally, I had a call from one of our DX Audio Service members who was wondering if I knew of a magazine which caters to some of the newer technology out there for the blind and in specific audio devices and things like recorders and radios and such. And the first thing that came to mind was Playback Magazine. Now, I don't know how many people know about this magazine. Playback Magazine is put together by Ed Potter, and it's a very good little magazine, exactly like the audio service on C90 cassettes. It's very, very good information. And I can recommend it wholeheartedly. If you'd like to get more information, write to Ed Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R, at Playback Magazine. The address is 1308 Evergreen Avenue, Goldsboro, G-O-L-D-S-B-O-R-O, North Carolina, 27530. You might want to drop him a dollar just to help pay for the postage and the cassette costs and get a sample copy and check it out. It's worth it. And speaking of being worth it, here is Mr. Bruce Conti with a look at some international DX.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the International DX Audio Service Report. I'm Bruce Conti with news of another New England DXer hearing an HCJB DX test on 690 kilohertz broadcasting from Ecuador. Committee to Preserve Radio Verifications Chairperson Jerry Berg received the November DX test in Lexington, Massachusetts, hearing Morse code and sirens during fade-outs of station CBF Montreal, Canada. What's interesting is that no special equipment was required, such as phasing units, regenerative tuners, beverage antennas, not even a loop antenna, just a receiver and long wire. Jerry explains.
So I was using your standard R8, listening an upper sideband. My antenna is 65-foot long wire, which actually is not straight, but it's in kind of a U layout running among the trees around my house. And that was it. No special equipment. Didn't hear anything for the first 11 minutes or so during the test, and in fact, I almost packed it up at about 6:10 and went to bed. But they decided to stay with it, and I'm glad I did.
And here is some of what was heard. McVicker and the HCJB DX party line have scheduled monthly DX tests on 690 kHz through September 1996. This provides medium wave DXers an exceptional opportunity to add Ecuador to their loggings, and correct reports are verified with a special 690 kHz QSL card. Send reports with one IRC or first class postage in U.S. or Canadian stamps to 690 DX Test, care of English Language Service, HCJB, Casillas 17-17-691, Quito, Ecuador. Cassette tapes are also welcome but cannot be returned. Here are the dates and times for 690 DX tests over the winter months. All times are UTC. December 3rd at 0600, January 7 at 0800, February 4 at 0600, and March 3rd at 0600. You may have noticed a buzzing noise in the 690 DX test recording. That same noise is heard here in Nashua, New Hampshire. Last year, it was identified as a defective Cuban transmitter. Question now is whether the transmitter has been allowed to continue to operate in this manner intentionally, or if it's just a matter of neglect. Another station from Cuba with poor audio and possibly transmitter trouble is making its way into New Hampshire on 1060 kHz. Perhaps unique among Cuban stations, this one uses call letters in its ID. Listen now to Cuba on 1060 kHz, IDing as Network CMKS, in Spanish, Cadena CMKS. Next time on the International DX Audio Service Report, with part two of the Newfie experience, as the October Newfoundland DXpeditioners are still busy reviewing tapes and compiling logs. I'm Bruce Conti, 73's Good DX, and happy holidays. Ho, ho, ho!
Looks like we have a lot of tapes coming in for assignment air check. In case you missed it and don't know what assignment air check is, check out your last magazine and you'll hear all about it. Our next assignment will be on the January 1996 edition of the DX Audio Service. Hey, let's assign ourselves over to the Musings for Members column.
This is Ted Chittenden from Phoenix. Last month ago, KJZZ 91.5 FM added more information programming to its format and dropped a lot of its jazz. KOOL AM stopped the solid gold, the cool gold format, which was on the satellite until the end of last year, and started simulcasting with its FM sister station. And 103.9 KBZR out of Apache Junction started simulcasting its Generation X format with KRAM out of Payson. Interesting, the latter has no commercials for, there are no commercials on the latter four stations in, for places in Payson.
This is Gary Kettler in Austin, Texas, and it appears that 620 KAAM in Plano, Texas, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, is on the air. Today is October the 31st, Halloween, and they are running various versions of a song that have something to do with Unforgettable in their title. They're calling themselves Unforgettable KAAM, and I think that is a satellite music service, but they finally have it on the air.
Greetings, audio service. Marty Rimpaugh here on the 2nd of November. I thought that radio stations, especially oldies formats, had an abundance of commercials, but I'm finding a very disturbing, if it's a trend, I don't know what's going on. Brother Stare has a two-hour block on, of all things, KOMA Oklahoma City from 9 to 11 West Coast time, and before that, Ray Pringle is on. I don't know what's going on, but you'd think that KOMA would have an abundance of advertisers, but apparently they're purchasing some religious time.
Hey, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to DXers everywhere. This is Tom Jackson, old TJ from Sycamore, Illinois. I'm just wondering about that Caribbean Christian radio station at 1020. What's the power output on that station? It wipes out KDKA all the time. And I want to ask Fred, you at the end of your tape, you always say for us to go out and support radio. What ways can we do that, especially supporting AM radio? Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas.
This is Tim Hendel in Miami. Someone was looking for a Panasonic RF2200, and I'm also looking for a new one. One good source for used equipment is Universal Radio in Ohio. Number is 800-431-3939, and they do have you recondition used equipment. I didn't mean to say a new one. I meant to say another one.
This is Ted from Phoenix, Arizona. The comments made by John Balker on the November PX audio service concerning KLVO in Provo, Utah, it's my understanding that station is at 960, not 980 on the dial. The closest 980 is 60 miles south in Ridgefield. Also, KQST FM 100.1 in Sedona is moving to 102.9, and by the time you hear this, should have their power raised. I believe it's up to 50,000 watts. One more note, which I forgot to leave the last time. KRIM 104.3 out of Payson is using the same disc jockeys in the same playlist as KBZR 103.9, but right now they are not simulcasting. They're in fact playing sometimes ahead, sometimes behind KBZR, and I think this is an attempt to get Northern Arizona advertisers like Flagstaff, Cottonwood, the Verde Valley, etc., to advertise on the station. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Hi there, Mike Dukin calling from Northwestern Wisconsin on Wednesday morning, November 14th. A couple of format changes in the area. First off, WSAU in Wausau, Wisconsin on 550 on AM is now running the business radio format. However, they do run Sports Byline USA at night, and they have kept all their Wisconsin sports, the Green Bay Packers, Milwaukee Bucks, and Wisconsin Badgers. And KJJO on 950, St. Louis Park, Minnesota, suburban Twin Cities, is now running the Solid Gold Soul format. And I suspect that's from the Jones Satellite Network. I think it sounds pretty good.
Greetings, audio service members. Marty Rimpaugh here. The station that I told you guys about in September that was testing, that called itself KSJI in San Martin at 1120, has changed its call and is now on the air as KZSJ. It is featuring the format La Zeta, which is the Spanish format, which just fired a bunch of stations in Mexico to their network today.
And if you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today on the Action Line. It's area 419-228-4199. Just follow the instructions and you'll get through it just fine. And to answer the question about what you can do to support radio, it's very simple. If you ever have a chance to correspond with a radio station, AM, FM, or shortwave, or get on a talk show of some sort, or or have an opportunity to talk to one of the hosts of a talk show, be sure to explain to them a little bit about the National Radio Club and the DX Audio Service. I had a chance to talk to a friend of mine who does a talk show, and he was amazed that such a club like the National Radio Club has existed since 1933. He knew absolutely nothing about it, and he was very fascinated by the fact that there are people out there who actually listen and support AM radio. So if you have a chance to talk with somebody, be sure to talk us up. Let them know about the National Radio Club and the DX Audio Service, and that's a good way to support radio. Jerry Starr has an interesting sidebar about the station on 1660. Let's give a listen.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with an AM switch sidebar. It's the 1660 story of WJDM Elizabeth, New Jersey. As regular listeners remember, the FCC recently revoked its list of stations that could migrate to the new expanded band. Only one station on that list was granted a special temporary authority to begin broadcasting in the expanded band, and that station was WJDM, 1530 in Elizabeth, New Jersey. In early October, DXers began to notice a station testing with music on 1660, and although IDs were never heard, it was assumed this was WJDM. The beginning of November, we had an interview with Mr. John Quinn, the owner of WJDM, and he was very eager to have NRCers know the full story and is very friendly toward the DXing hobby. Here's what we learned. The 1660 tests are indeed WJDM. Testing is being done at several different power levels. Some tests have been at the full 10 kilowatt power, although most are at a reduced level, since full power is not required for most of the testing being done. The new 1660 transmitter is being diplexed into their existing tower, which is only about a 100-foot tower. The diplexing system is working well, and both 1530 and 1660 stations can run at full power simultaneously into the same antenna. Now, obviously, they plan to continue using the present frequency because of the diplexing arrangement. There was some speculation they might drop the 1530 frequency and use 1660 exclusively, but this is not the case. Programming will not be simulcast. For obvious reasons, Mr. Quinn was reluctant to reveal the format of the new operation, but we'll find out when it gets on the air. A target date has not been set, although Mr. Quinn said they were hoping for a mid-November startup, so they may have begun broadcasting by the time you hear this. When we spoke, they were having problems with a new state-of-the-art remotely operated audio processor, and that was holding up progress. DXers who have heard their test have noticed a wide variation in audio quality, and this is probably why. Another short-range problem concerns the transmitter location in a swamp area and a reservoir. On the day we spoke, Mr. Quinn said they had 4 feet of water surrounding the transmitter, and access was a bit difficult. However, this location should also provide excellent local ground conductivity. Future plans including building separate studios in Manhattan for the 1660 station. Now, the call for 1660 will also be WJDM. We find that sort of interesting. We have an unanswered question concerning whether an expanded band operation could have a separate call if the parent station continues to broadcast in the traditional band. Now, this doesn't seem to be addressed in any of the FCC paperwork we were able to find. It would seem that some stations running separate programming on their expanded band frequency might desire a different call for that station. Whether or not that's legal is yet to be found out. Mr. Quinn welcomes reception reports and has already received quite a number, including a tape of a very clear reception all the way from Oregon, with which he was particularly impressed. All reports should be sent to the WJDM address as it appears in the NRC log in care of Mr. John Quinn. And all, of course, should include return postage. Now, obviously, WJDM will be flooded with requests for verifications. They have a very small staff that will be even busier running two stations, so patience in waiting for your reply is a must. Mr. Quinn told us that he also has no assurance from the FCC that WJDM will remain assigned to 1660 once the expanded band is reconfigured. Now, they have informed the FCC they'll be willing to move 20 kilohertz up or down if necessary to maximize the overall use of the new band, but even a small move will necessitate the retuning of their diplex filters. Their preference is obviously to remain on 1660, and they have informed the FCC of this also. Now, with an estimated 16 million radios in the New York City Metro already capable of tuning the expanded band, Mr. Quinn is obviously excited of the potential of his new station, and he also seems fascinated with the possibilities that WJDM 1660 may have coast-to-coast nighttime coverage during the time that they alone rule the frequency. I'm Jerry Starr for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Jerry. And after hearing what the weather forecast is like in Chicago, let's warm Ken up a little bit with a jingle.
The winner, ZDX. AM to 1340 Bermuda.
Hello again, sports fans. I'm Ken Honestruck back again, this time with the National Basketball Association radio station lineups. And I have some changes and two new teams to tell you about. Ooh, it's cold outside this November, but nice and warm and toasty inside. And if I was at the health club right now, I'd be shooting some baskets to get some good exercise. But I'm here to inform you of all the flagship stations to pass along, so here we go. In the Eastern Conference Central Division, the Chicago Bulls are for the last year on 670 WMAQ with Neil Funk and Harvey Catchings, and Spanish on 560 WIND. The Indiana Pacers are back on Powerhouse WIBC, the Big 1070. The Charlotte Hornets again on 1110 WBT. The Detroit Pistons on 950 WWJ. The Milwaukee Bucks on Powerhouse 620 WTMJ. The Atlanta Hawks can be heard everywhere now at 750 WSB. The Cleveland Cavaliers and their fine announcer Joe Tate on 1100 WWWE. And the expansion Toronto Raptors have chosen a good station, 1010 CFRB. In the Atlantic Division, the Orlando Magic can be heard on 560 WDBO. The New York Knickerbockers on 660 WFAN. The Philadelphia 76ers on 610 WIP. The Miami Heat. The English station is 940 WINZ, and the Spanish station, I believe, is 830 WACC. The Washington Bullets got two flagships in the area. 570 WTEM is the main station, and down in Baltimore, it's 1360 WWLG. In New Jersey, the Nets can be heard on 1560 WQEW, that gets out well, and the Boston Celtics on 850 WEEI. In the Western Conference, we go to the Midwest Division, where the world champion Houston Rockets are back on 740 in English, KTRH with Jim Durham, and in Spanish on 1010 KLAT. The San Antonio Spurs get out very well on Clear Channel 1200 WOAI, and the Spanish broadcasts on 1350 KCOR. The Denver Nuggets have made a move from 850 to 950 in lower wattage on 950 The Fan, KKFN in Denver. The Utah Jazz and the Dallas Mavericks have both got flagship stations on 570 this year. Okay, the Utah Jazz on KISN and the Dallas Mavericks on KLIF. Wonder what it's like to be between the two. The Minnesota Timberwolves will be on 1130 KFAN. And to finish it off, the Western Conference Pacific Division, the Phoenix Suns on 620 KTAR in English, and in Spanish on 1480 KPHX. The Seattle Supersonics on another fan, well, not quite, 950 KJR will do the games. The LA Lakers are back on the station that always does them, KLAC 570 with Chick Hearn, says Mark Marino. He verified that for me. The Sacramento Kings are going to be on Hot Talk 1140, KHTK. The Golden State Warriors on 680, KNBR. The Portland Trail Blazers on 1190, KEX. The Los Angeles Clippers back on 710, KMPC. And the expansion Vancouver Grizzlies on 980, CKNW from New Westminster. And I'd appreciate any corrections that can be sent my way. I hope you enjoy the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, and I'll see you again in the near future. So thanks for listening, and take care, friends. Good DX.
Thanks, Ken. Now here's Chris Connor with a look at confusing call letters.
This is Chris Connor with a story that could be called a station by any other name, but we'll call it Call Letter Battles Draw Territorial Lines by Billboard Magazine's Eric Baylert. It reads, when the Reagan administration ushered in its hands-off policy of deregulation in the early 80s, the Federal Communications Commission effectively washed its hands of several procedures, such as determining whether new applied-for call letters were too similar to already established ones. Rather than the Federal Communications Commission reviewing objections raised by broadcasters and deciding if certain calls would cause confusion among listeners, broadcasters were told to decide the issue themselves, in effect, take disputes to court. Since the number of call letter battles since deregulation have been relatively few, Federal Communications Commission officials can accurately claim that allowing marketplace forces to dictate the name of new stations is working. But recently, two new confrontations erupted, and broadcasters involved say the commission, rather than freeing up the radio industry from unwanted bureaucracy, is simply walking away from its responsibility and costing broadcasters thousands of dollars in court fees in order to have their rows resolved. When station attorneys notified Lou Rothberg, vice president of operations at Long Island, New York's adult contemporary station WBLI, that a long, quiet crosstown station was going to sign on as Oldies WBSI, he sent off a letter to the station's owner, Betty Fox, asking her to reconsider. He says months went by before he received her answer, "Thanks, but no thanks." "We didn't think there'd be a conflict," said WBSI General Manager Ron Gold, explaining the station always intended to use B103 as its primary identifier. Gold says Fox was partial to WBSI because the letters stood for Bay Shore and Islip, Long Island, towns the station serves. At WBLI, executives saw plenty of reasons to be upset. People filling out Arbitron diaries screw up enough without the help of new, nearly identical call letters, says Rothberg. "What if people think they're listening to me, but that we've changed formats to oldies?" he asked rhetorically. "They're going to take me off their push button, and they're not going to come back." Paul Fleshman, general manager at Long Island's WMJC and president of the Long Island Radio Broadcasters Association, likens the WBSI move to a bottler announcing a new soft drink called Pepsi. "Pepsi would protect its trademark," he says. On February 5th, the day of WBSI's ribbon-cutting party, station executives were hit with an injunction, ordering them to appear in court to sort out the call letter dispute. Before a federal judge, WBLI attorneys argued their case and suggested that until WBSI changed its calls, the station must run on-air disclaimers, reminding listeners not to confuse WBSI with WBLI. The judge agreed. After further discussions, WBSI managers agreed to apply for new calls. Until those were approved, the reminders ran at the top of each hour when the station used its full legal name. On March 2, 1993, WBSI officially became WBZO. WBLI's Rothberg did not think of the disclaimer idea on his own. He did some quick research and discovered a similar case in Fort Wayne, Indiana during the mid-80s involving Top 40 WMEE and a new competitor, WMCZ. WMEE executives took their counterpart to court, and a judge decided a disclaimer must be aired every time the name WMCZ was used. WMCZ soon opted for WQTZ. An interesting footnote, a few years later, another Top 40 station, WBBE, signed on. Again, WMEE stepped in and went to court. Again, a judge opted for an on-air clarification. At the time, WBBE General Manager Dan Dudley thought WMEE managers were nitpicking with their complaint. So before he switched calls to WDJB, he ran some disclaimers, although not the type WMEE had in mind. WBEE, not to be confused with WMEE, because they suck. The issue of confusing calls again made headlines when Los Angeles Spanish station KSKQ-FM, located right next to classic rocker KLSX on the dial, switched its calls to KLAX last summer and then exploded to the top of Arbitron's fall book. Some in the market, including KLSX morning man Howard Stern, insisted the similar call letters were at the root of KLAX's startling surge. Jim Freeman said days before his exit as KLSX vice president and general manager, because of the two stations' distinctly different audiences, not to mention languages, he never thought there was marketplace confusion. One reason the station did not go to court to try to discourage KLAX from using the call letters was that KLSX managers did not think a judge would rule in their favor, since the two formats are so different. KLAX is a very, very strong station, he says. They're no fluke. Instead, he and others at KLSX were concerned that Arbitron data entry operators would inadvertently punch the wrong letters when working the Los Angeles market. For the initial KLAX book, Freeman praises the job Arbitron did in keeping an eye on the situation. As for the future, Arbitron's Vice President Sales and Marketing Radio Station Services, Jay Geither, says KLSX has nothing to worry about. "I can't recall any time data entry errors were a problem," he says. Many broadcasters involved in call letter feuds criticized the Federal Communications Commission for abrogating its responsibility, as Rothberg at WBLI puts it. They thought they could deregulate and let the marketplace take care of itself, only to have broadcasters spend time and money in court. That's a costly way of taking care of itself, says Rothberg, who estimates the station's brief court skirmish cost more than $5,000. Gold, across town at the now WBZO, agrees. We're going to local court to decide a federal communications issue. That's ridiculous, he says. Freeman at KLSX points out, like any special interest, we're happy when deregulation helps and unhappy when it hurts us. Clayton Pendaveris, the Federal Communications Commission's television branch chief who oversees the awarding of radio call letters, defends the commission's decision to get out of the business of settling disputes. Call letter disputes, he says, really boil down to a trademark issue and are better handled by the courts.
I don't know if any of our DX Audio Service members collect stamps, but Stan Morris sent this tantalizing little ad clip from a stamp magazine. It reads, EKKO, Echo. Anyone recognize those letters? This is the name for the verification reception stamps that radio pioneers collected to prove that they heard far-off stations in the early days of radio. Collection of over 700 different, many foreign, the earliest 1923, many in color and illustrated. A collection this large is exceedingly rare today. Price $500, much less than a dollar each, a real giveaway. Contact Herman Hurst Jr. at Post Office Box 1583, Boca Raton, Florida 33429. As we wind up 1995 here on the DX Audio Service, I'd like to remind you that if you're looking for a gift for someone this holiday season, you might want to consider a gift subscription to the DX Audio Service. For this month only, the month of December, we're offering a special where if you give a gift subscription to an existing member of the DX Audio Service, we'll give you a month free on your subscription, so not only do they get a gift, but you do too. And we're also offering this. If you bring in a new member to the DX Audio Service, we'll give you 3 months free on your subscription to the DX Audio Service. So not only do you give a gift, but you get one as well. If you need more information, contact us here at the DX Audio Service or through the Publication Center. And with that, we'll put 1995 to rest and look forward to seeing you next year in 1996 on the DX Audio Service. I'd like to thank all the editors for their help in the past year in putting together a swell magazine, and also to those of you who have contributed to the columns in one way or another. If you haven't contributed to a column, by all means, in 96, make that a resolution and do it today. Remember, get out there and support radio. Talk up the DX Audio Service and radio as a hobby. And we'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. 73, good DX to you.